You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi. Welcome to Friends of Fantasy Benefits Podcast.
Yeah, give yourself a couple minutes just to talk about you. I know, I'm gonna sit back, drink some coffee, whatever.
But we're here for a purpose. It's not to just talk about how amazing I am, even though I would love to continue to do that. It's to talk about the Cleveland Indians.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
If I told you he was the only closer to have the or more saves the last 3 years in a sub-3 ERA, would you believe me?
I would, yes.
I made that stat up.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Join me on this episode is Mike Warner. Mike, how you doing?
Oh, Justin, we're reunited and it feels so good. That's all I'm doing.
It really does feel so good, though I am sick. So, and I've got this podcast to do. I've got some prospect pods to do with Matt. Matt are going to talk to James Anderson of RotoWire tonight for a pod that's going to go up on Wednesday. So I'm just going to have to pull through it, and if I start vomiting mid-podcast, you guys understand why.
life's hard for somebody of your stature. I know. It's a tough job.
Someone of my stature. Do I have stature now?
I think so. I think since your official invite to Tout Wars happened, I think that you have been given that right. So
I haven't even announced that here.
Have you not?
Yeah, no. I mean, I haven't even talked about all the cool stuff that's going on for me. I guess I can mention that real quick.
Yeah, give yourself a couple minutes just to talk about you. I know, I'm going to sit back, drink some coffee, whatever.
Yeah, for those who don't know, I'm officially going to be a member of Tout Wars this year. Get my own team. I'm not just drafting for Stefania Bell and then letting her,
play it out.
Play it out. She did all right. She finished fifth or something like that last year. And that's considering I drafted her Julio Teheran and Kevin Gausman on that team. So,
thanks, Justin. Appreciate it.
Yeah, kudos to you, Stefania. And that's the variance of head-to-head because the team did not look good at the end of the final roster, but she somehow finished fifth. So, so I'll be in the head-to-head draft against Paul Spohr and Jake Seeley, Howard Bender, and then, doing the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational. If you guys haven't seen much about that, it is an industry league that I've put together with, it's going to have 195 industry analysts, all sorts of guys from Baseball HQ, Baseball Prospectus, CBS, ESPN, Yahoo, and then a bunch of guys who aren't as well known, including a number of our fantasy analysts at Friends of Fantasy Benefits, and we have a ton of them. You'll get to know some of them and have gotten to know some of them over the course of the off season so far, as a number of them are going to have their own podcasts mixed in with me and Matt and Chuck and Darius and a couple of the other guys that you've already grown to love or hate. Just a lot of cool stuff. You can follow me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. Follow the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational at TGFBI. Yeah, that's it. And you can follow Mike on Twitter at Mike Warner FWFB. But we're here for a purpose. It's not to just talk about how amazing I am, even though I would love to continue to do that. It's to talk about the Cleveland Indians. And they are a very good team. They are a very good fantasy, collection of fantasy players as well, including having my favorite player in all of fantasy baseball, my boy Bradley Zimmer. We'll get to him later. But we're going to start with some of the infielders. Let's talk about the kind of two studs on the infield. And no, that's not Jason Kipnis and Yonder Alonso. That is Jose Ramirez and Francisco Lindor. Mike, are these guys first-round talent to you, second-round talent?
They're definitely second-round talent. With Lindor, he obviously went on a power binge last season, and 33 home runs is double what he did the year prior in 2016. And based on his approach change at the plate, I mean, he lifted his fly ball rate from 28% in 2016 and 29% in 2015, all the way up to 42% in 2017. I expect more of the same going into this year. It remained consistent between the first and second half last year for Lindor in that category, and I also don't think the speed will ever be much more than what we've seen. Does he have the ability to steal 25, 30 bases? I think he does, but at the same time, I believe that his contact rate and his plate approach now, with him being able to loft the ball more, gives him the ability to hit for more power. And, based on his batting average profile from last year, I think we'll expect probably about the same. I don't think he'll be a 300 hitter, but I also don't think he'll drop in batting average. Relatively decent walk rate. I think that he's a firm second rounder based on the fact that he should hit 20 to 25 home runs and probably steal anywhere between 15, 18 bases. And that's, that's a second round talent. As far as Ramirez, I've been on board for years now. I like his multi-position eligibility. The power, I don't expect to be the same as last year, but I wouldn't think that he would drop much, somewhere in the 23 to 25 home run range. He hit almost 30 bombs last year in 2017. But, the speed is also consistent with a guy that's going to hit, have between 15 and 20 stolen bases as well. Like they're both relatively close in terms of profile. They both make the same amount of contact. They both have pretty elevated batting averages based on their plate skills and their ability to make contacts and everything. If I had to pick between the two, I like Ramirez a little bit more, just because I feel like I can find other shortstops and later on in the draft. And Ramirez has been a solid, rock solid fantasy commodity now for 2 years running, $29 or more in roto value the last 2 years. So I think I agree. They're both second round players for me. I love them both. I would go with Ramirez just because of the things I mentioned before, but they're both really prime talents.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I love both these players. I think there's a chance that we see Lindor. I mean, I think both players are probably going to regress a little bit in power. I'm not necessarily saying that they're going to go below like 25 home runs or anything like that, because I think they'll both keep at least that. I think there's a chance Lindor's average comes back. You look at the BABIP drop last year. He's been a career 310 BABIP guy. He had a 324 BABIP the year before, 348 in 2015. Last year, all the way down to 275. This is a fast guy who should be operating with a 300 BABIP at least. So I don't think 290, 300 is out of the question. And then you start talking about these guys who got power. They've got speed. They both have been very healthy. So I'm gonna pose a question to you that I don't think is getting asked in the industry at large. At least I haven't heard it, and I listen to a lot of podcasts. Why is Carlos Correa going above these guys?
I'm assuming that it's kind of like the Bryce Harper effect. You are paying a higher price for the potential upside that we haven't seen yet, which I disagree with in the early rounds, but that is a great question. I do not agree with Lindor going behind Carlos Correa at this point, but there is always that like question with fantasy owners, like, oh my gosh, this guy has this high pedigree. He's supposed to be this type of player. And in reality, they are something else. I mean, Lindor is an example of that by himself, a defense first guy coming through the minor leagues, somebody that I know you and I have been wrong on for multiple years And now we've kind of come around. But, that's the thing in fantasy. There's always the reality of things and the, the expected outcome that you want in your mind, and that there's a kind of a fine line there. So I disagree with it, and I think that's a pretty great question, honestly.
Yeah, I don't think, when our ranks come out, Correa is not going to be above Lindor in my shortstop ranks.
Is he a first rounder for you? That's the question you posed to me. Like, I don't think he's a first rounder.
Who, Lindor?
Maybe in 15 teams. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I mean, in a 15 team league, I think him and Jose Ramirez are borderline. It all depends on how you want to build your team. I just had the 15th pick in an NFBC league. You and I were talking about it off air. And I went Chris Bryant and Corey Kluber. Like, could I have easily, if I was to do it over again, knowing what I know now, having made my third and fourth round picks and seeing my fifth and sixth round picks quickly approaching, I might have gone Lindor or Jose Ramirez because I'm, you know, lacking a little bit of speed right now. And I kind of wish maybe I'd grabbed a guy who steals 20 bases. So, hindsight's 20/20, obviously. And I don't think anybody would blame me for taking a former NL MVP in the prime of his career and the reigning AL Cy Young. So I don't think, it wasn't like I made bad picks or anything, but I see the argument. Currently Jose Ramirez and Lindor are both going behind Carlos Correa. They're both going behind Aaron Judge, and I think both of those are a mistake.
Agree.
All right, let's move over to the other two guys in the infield. Both are kind of very undervalued right now, and I'm not going to say necessarily for the wrong reasons or anything, but I'm wondering if you see any value in a Yonder Alonso or a Jason Kipnis.
Kipnis, I do like the fact that they moved him, shifted him to center field for a little while last year. And if you're in
I don't.
Why? I mean, it could possibly in some leagues give him some eligibility in the outfield, which can be a little bit beneficial, but I'm just not a Kipnis guy. I haven't been, this is a guy that used to go in the fourth, fifth round at times a couple years ago. And it, just based on his durability, he obviously had some issues last year. He was able to string out some decent health, but he's always somebody that gets kind of nicked up and bruised up. The stolen bases have pretty much trickled down to nothing last year. And I don't really see him being somebody that is going to rebound heavily in that category. Cleveland has stayed pretty average in the stolen base attempts per game over the last couple of years. So I don't really expect them to give him the green light a ton. And if you're looking at him from a power perspective, he's just kind of somebody that you can grab off the waiver wire if you needed power. And he's probably a mediocre one at that, to be honest. So I'm not really giving any type of vote of confidence for Kipnis. I will say in deeper formats, if you need somebody that you think can rebound durability wise this year, I don't think it's the worst move. He has hit for batting average at times in his career. But overall, not really an aspiring profile for me. Somebody that I think is kind of on the downturn of his career. He's only 831, but he seems like he's, I don't know, 50 at this point. But Yonder Alonso, I'm not sold on. And maybe this is an example of me kind of missing the boat on somebody, but the same with Justin. I actually believe in Justin Smoke a little bit more than Alonso, but with Alonso, like the increase in fly ball percentage was so drastic last year that I just can't bank on that going into drafts now. Do I agree that his plate skills have always been pretty good in terms of making contact? Yeah. And last year he kind of sold out on contact a bit. Like, he had a 26% strikeout rate. His career level is 18%. So he obviously sold out a bit for power. I'm not looking at his Fangraphs page, but I'm assuming that he probably had a higher pull percentage as well. And, I just don't really, I have to see him do something like this again before I even get remotely close to buying in. And to be honest, there's guys that can hit 25 home runs that I can grab, 300, 400th pick, depending on how deep my league is. So I'm really not in for Alonso or Kipnis. I do think that they're decent filler options, like later in a draft, if you're in a deep league or whatever, but I'm just not really sold on either.
His pull percentage wasn't any different in 2017 than it was in 2016. I mean, it went up a point.
Okay.
We're not talking about a guy who necessarily pulled the ball. We all know from, if you read Eno Saris's piece on Fangraphs, I want to say it's still up. Oh, no, it's obviously not up still in the top five articles, but you can find it. He did a piece prior to the season talking about Yonder Alonso changing his launch angle, and he did. Unfortunately, he did it Ryan Schimpf-like. and it eventually caught up to him. His infield fly ball percentage spiked. He got a lot more balls into the air, but a lot of them just, fell before they reached the wall. So here's what I do like, because I agree with you on Jason Kipnis. I've never been a Kipnis guy. He missed a lot of last season. Sure, he was decent when he came back. Hit 273, 342, 455 in the last month of the season, had a home run, had a stolen base. But ultimately, he also did that with a 320 BABIP, which he's not going to keep up. He struck out, twice as much as he walked. I don't believe that Kipnis is ever going to be a viable 12-team guy, unless maybe a reserve guy, you know?
At best, so, yes.
You know, in your deeper formats, you could probably get him really cheap, but I'm not interested. I think second base is deep enough this year that you don't need to worry about that. Yonder Alonso, the only reason I'm going to disagree with you that I will have him on some teams, and I've already drafted him in a league. I drafted him, I believe, in the RotoWire Dynasty Invitational, either as reserve or you know, a corner guy or something like that, though it's a 20-team league, 40-man rosters, is his ADP. His ADP currently is 315th.
Yeah, I saw that.
There's no price attached.
Yeah, there's really no reason.
Doesn't have a team, and he's going, like 40 or 30 picks ahead of him? Doesn't have a team.
That's terrible, yeah.
You know, I mean, ultimately, is this guy that much different than, like, a Ryan Healy who's going over 100 picks in front of him?
No, I would take, you know, I would take him about in that price range, I suppose. I mean, it's just more or less like where you're trying to grab that power, because obviously I think people, fantasy owners, have really seen over the last couple of years that speed is the obvious category that we need to kind of focus on in early drafts, and power is something that you can get way late. But it's kind of crazy. I mean, Brandon Belt's going in front of Yonder Alonso, like barely. I would probably have Belt over him.
And
just
I think
because
Belt's a steal where he's going.
I agree. You know, and Wilmer Flores I like in a myriad of ways, especially in NL only. I play in a premier NL only league every year that I seem to always grab Flores. But yes, in general, I love his ADP. I'm just more or less talking about the player, and I don't know what he will do this year other than, like, you know, Ryan Shipp is an extreme
he's
case.
He's going to play every day. I mean, the bottom line, I mean, you look at this Indians team, and they don't have, I mean, unless they're going to put E5 at first base.
Against lefties, maybe. But I mean, against righties, Alonso hit .280 with 25 bombs last year. So, I mean, like,
and
a pretty decent average.
They're already platooning Lonnie Chisenhall. So, I mean, it's not like how many guys can they really platoon? They're going to platoon them with Giovanni Urshela. They do not have a deep bench.
They don't. No.
You know, I mean, this is a team that I think should go after maybe some guys who are available via trade or some guys on the waiver wire or guys in free agency, because this is not a deep team. You know, they're going to be relying on guys like Michael Brantley and Jason Kipnis to stay healthy.
Yeah, this has been a fairly healthy team the last couple of years. Like they've been competitive, but part of that is because they haven't sustained a ton of injuries.
The rotation is so good.
It really is, especially compared to others in the Central and stuff. But that's more baseball than fantasy. But, like, in reality, going back to Alonso for a second, like, I do think that we are going to see somewhere in the middle of what he's been in his career and last year. Based on his price, I think that's worth a gamble. Just based on it, looking at it in a vacuum, I don't love the profile. So it's kind of like a mix and match of that.
All right. Is E5 underrated?
Absolutely. I know that there was a little bit of skills erosion last year, but, you know, second half, 21 home runs, .256 average, 17% walk rate. The power metrics for the season weren't as awesome as his last few years. So you can certainly kind of look at fantasy owners that are, you know, kind of trying to avoid older players, which I'm not, will kind of look at that and say, okay, look, you know, he's 35 years old now. His skills are kind of starting to erode a bit. I'm going to end up, you know, waving on E5. But last year, what, he was a second or third round pick, and now he's going in the top 60-ish area.
He just went 71st in my NFBC league.
That's insane. It's insane. I this is a guy that's hit or flirted with 40 home runs since every season since 2012. He is as reliable as it gets. Like, him and Nelson Cruz have been guys that I have drafted every year for the last few years, and they have obviously helped me stay competitive in each league that I've drafted them in. Am I going to say that he's going to hit 40 again? Probably not. And do I think he's going to stay on the field the whole year again? That's also a little bit in question because he's 35, but he more than likely will be full-time DH. That obviously doesn't hinder your body a ton on a day-to-day basis. And his skills are still relatively the same. His walk rate, he's becoming more patient. Last year was his highest walk rate of his career. Yes, he has struck out a little bit more the last couple of seasons, but overall, he is underrated because this is somebody that's been a stable fantasy commodity for years. And just because he's 35 doesn't mean he can't bop it out of the park and do his little parrot thing that he does with his arm over, you know, around the bases, which I always love. So I love E5.
Yeah, I do too. I I was talking to you again before the show about my NFBC team. I took Rhys Hoskins in the fourth round at the turn, and I really debated taking E5 because I have E5 ranked higher. I just have so many shares already of E5 that I don't want to be overexposed.
But for sure.
When my ranks come out, E5 will be above Rhys Hoskins because he's as consistent as they come. You know exactly what you're going to get. You're going to get 35 home runs and, you know, a 260 average with a crap ton of RBIs and a mainstay at first base. So, like what isn't to love about this guy, especially with him dropping? Like I said, he just went 71st in my NFBC league. It's absolutely insane. That's great value, whoever got him.
Yeah, and if you look at the first base pool right now, he is going, what, 8th or 9th among first basemen? I just disagree with that. I would take him above Abreu.
I'm not saying above Abreu because the average. Abreu's sure. Average is stellar.
Well, let me be clear. I usually play an OBP format, so I kind of sure. Tend to look at walk rates first above batting average profiles. But yes, in average leagues, yeah, I can make the case for Abreu to go ahead. But Rhys Hoskins, I'm still not taking above E5. Like, I understand why you did, and I understand, like, there is the potential of this guy hitting somewhere in the vicinity of, like, 50 home runs this year.
You would have heard me scream on this podcast had E5 gotten back to me, and I could have moved Hoskins to the outfield.
Yeah, I was hoping that would happen, actually, but unfortunately it didn't. But for the most part, I agree with the guys going in front of E5. I just don't agree with where he's going. Like, on average 57th, I don't care for that at all. I would be willing to take him where Abreu's going, which is about 44, 45.
I think he's going to the top 50. There.
Yes, for sure. And I think it's not a big discrepancy, but still.
It's something, especially because that means, like I said, in certain drafts, he's gone as low as 86. And he just went 71st in mine. So there's ageism in fantasy, and I think E5 is one of those guys that, you know, he's going to hit until he doesn't, but you just can't bake that it's going to be this year.
Agreed.
So let's go ahead and move on into the outfield. I'll just, you know, let's just start with my boy Bradley Zimmer. He's 25 years old, finally got a real taste at the major leagues last year. He's going to be the everyday center fielder, unless you believe that for some reason they're going to try that Kipnis situation out again. I believe that he has the ability to go 15-30. Do you?
Ugh. Yeah, with what average and what, like, I love Zimmer. I've touted him for years. I know that you love him too. He went to the University of San Francisco, and I know you love that. The ground ball rate last year tells me, and his power metrics tell me, that 15 home runs is probably where he can sit. He's so bad at making contact, and he's so bad at making contact against lefties as well. Like, I just, I mean, righties last year, he had a 36% strikeout rate. Against lefties, he was at 26%. So I guess I'm making the wrong case, but, like, overall, I'm worried about playing time because
defense,
I do think,
man,
they will try.
He is a fantastic defensive center
fielder. He is,
fielder.
But what? And you've why got not Brandt, go Greg Allen in center field? Like, if you're
Greg Allen's not ready.
Yeah, I suppose.
I think Greg Allen plays a corner. I mean, they've got Lonnie Chisenhall and Michael Brantley in that outfield. They need a guy who can cover the field the way Zimmer can. If Greg Allen comes up, he'll replace Lonnie Chisenhall in right. Or fill in for Michael Brantley and left when Brantley gets injured, you know, tripping over the front steps out of the
grass.
Dugout.
Yeah, the grass will probably, you know, be uneven or something, and he falls down. Whatever happens, but here's the thing: I love Zimmer and his overall profile. I love because yes, he is a 30 to even 35 stolen base candidate for this year. 15 home runs is definitely in the cards, I think, and you know, so you asked if he would be a 15-30 player. I think that's like, what, 70% chance of happening, barring playing time, barring injury. My worries are the possible loss of playing time based on his plate skills and the possibility that they just want to just send him down or even, like, have him benched for a while. But there is a lot of pros here. Also, his draft cost is fairly high at 200, depending on how you want to look at it.
High?
Like, I look
you
at
think
it
that's
as
high?
I think that's high. Like, oh. I mean, for a guy that, yes, so go back, what, 6-7 years when stolen bases weren't as critical back in that day. If we go back then, where is Zimmer going? You know, because I believe he would be going way later than that. And right now, because stolen bases are so valuable and because people are looking at it so much, I think that that's kind of going to boost his ADP. I don't think he sits at 200 either. I think he goes up as drafts start continuing to roll on here. And that's just a little bit rich for me. At the same time, I love the profile. He could end up, you know, stealing 30, 35 bases for sure. But I do know, I mean, I did a mock draft with Howard Bender the other day. He took him fairly high. Guys like him, guys like Ozzie Albies, I mean, guys like Denelson Lamet, like there's going to be a lot of helium. Manny Margot, there's going to be a lot of helium on certain players as we hit draft season. I think Zimmer is going to be one of them.
Okay, Manny Margot is currently going as the 152nd player off the board according to ADP. Zimmer is going 50 picks later. They have the same projections.
Do they really? Margot should have a way higher batting average projection.
258 to 251 or 241.
Yeah. I mean, the case for Zimmer is way better lineup.
50 points? Yeah, way better lineup, way better park.
Yeah, Margot will probably hit at the top of the lineup, though, and is,
yeah,
to me,
and
a
I'll
surefire
be batting
bet to play
second.
Yeah. I mean, Zimmer's probably going to hit 8th or 9th, right? I mean, Roster Resource has him at 9th. I would probably agree with that. Margot is definitely going to hit the top of the lineup with San Diego.
I don't know how you bat Jason Kipnis second. So I'm not buying what Roster Resource is feeding.
How do you bat Zimmer second?
I'm not saying you bat Zimmer second. I will say that I think he will walk at a higher clip. He walked at, you know, double-digit rates virtually all the way through the minors.
Minors, yeah.
You know, and, you know, he walked at a 7.8% clip coming up last year. I think that'll improve now that he's more, you know, accustomed to the major league level. I think it's insane that he's actually going outside the top 200. I will have lots of shares of, and I mean, I'm a Bradley Zimmer guy, and I have been since before he got called up. It is what it is. So
coincidentally, my projection that I've already done on him, I just looked it up. I had him at 470 at bats, hitting 14 home runs and 27 stolen bases.
Boom!
So, I mean, it came with a 220 batting average, but at the same time, it's kind of, you know, if you draft him there and you get that, that is value. So, I mean, I have to come up with a way to not describe a player as bad despite, you know, them not being great at everything. Just because Zimmer isn't great at contact doesn't mean he won't give you a load of fantasy value. So yes, I'm a fan of Zimmer, but I guess I have to get over this whole contact and plate skills thing, but ultimately he probably will go double digits and probably 25 stolen bases in the home run, you know, stolen base department. So, he's probably going to work out and I'm going to laugh.
All right. Either of these other outfielders you're interested in,
Brantley,
Chisenhall, Guyer. I mean, none of these guys are interesting, right?
Guyer is a guy that plays against lefties that can
like
certainly
great DFS
do well
option,
there.
Right?
Yes, yeah, always in DFS. Brantley, I can't trust at all. I don't know where he's going in draft, so I'm assuming it's pretty low at this point, 250. You know, what is it, a shoulder / an ankle now that we've dealt with the last
Isn't
couple
it
of
everything
years?
Everything with Brantley? I mean,
yeah, I mean, the stolen bases will probably not be there anymore because of the fact that he just had ankle problems and everything. But yeah, I'm not really on board Brantley. I do think there could
11
be
last year.
Yeah, I mean, how many of them was when he came back though? Like he ended up stealing 0 in the month of August. I mean, mind you, that was in very limited time. He did steal 4 in July, so there's a possibility that, you know, maybe he gets back to double digits.
I mean, it's hard. He didn't. I mean, he only played 2 games after August. So,
yeah, right.
I mean,
right. So
who knows, like what he's, you know? I mean, he had ankle surgery in the off season. I mean, they obviously think something of him because they did exercise the option on him, you know, for 2018. Yeah. It was
and he went
$11 million.
He almost hit 300 last year. The plate skills remain. He's able to make high contact. The walk rate isn't ever going to be exceptional, but he always does get on base at a fairly decent clip. So I think he will remain a solid hitter, somebody that you can definitely use in 5x5, you know, regular batting average leagues. He's just not going to hit for a ton of power, but he does kind of represent the profile that I'm looking for nowadays since I can get power anywhere, which is, you know, high ability to make contact and get on base and hit for a good batting average / contribute
yeah,
a few stolen bases.
There's just so many guys going behind him that I love. Willie Calhoun's going behind him.
I love – if there's one thing I want everybody to know, it's Willie Calhoun is going to be a top 150 player going into next year. Like, the guy is – an absolute stud, and I hope everybody realizes that. Yeah, so, like, I'm trying to keep him a secret.
He's gonna be on so many teams.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep him a secret. It's bad, but like, there's you know.
I guess supposedly Willie Calhoun. I know this is the Indians podcast, but Willie Calhoun has second base eligibility in Tout Wars.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Because they go by where they the number of games played in the majors and the minors, and I guess and 15 is the number. So I guess he got 15 games at second. In the minor leagues last year, so he's going to be on my team. I'm sure there are people in that league listening right now, but Willie Calhoun is going to be on my team.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much robbery. As far as Chisenhall, since we haven't mentioned him, he's decent against righties, and I think that's why they keep him around, but he's really not somebody that's a full-time player regardless, and if he were
Greg
to get full-time
taking
at bats,
that spot.
I agree. I think Greg Allen presents a little bit of a buying opportunity, especially in AL only and like way deeper 20 team formats and such, just because he does have speed and that's what we're looking for nowadays. But I think Chisenhall is kind of like a back burner. I'm definitely more interested in Brantley if his cost continues to drop and, you know, he's going to play hopefully in the vicinity of like half a season. That's where I might be interested.
All right. I'm just going to move past catcher because I don't think either of us care about Roberto Perez or Yan Gomes. I think this is a team that should be going after Real Muto.
For sure. They have guys that they can ship off. I understand, like, they have minor league prospects that they probably want to hold on to, like Tristan McKenzie, and et cetera. But, like,
but if,
they are in
if
a window
not
now
gonna
to
play,
win.
Yeah, if they're not going to play Francisco Mejia right now full-time at catcher, if they're going to start him in the minors like Roster Resource says they are, I don't know why they don't build a package around that and go get Real Muto.
They should. They're in their contention window right now. There's always so long that these starters can really stay healthy. Like Kluber, well, I'm sure we'll talk about for about 10 seconds here soon, but like Kluber's as stable as it gets, but there's only so long that remains the same. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to jump on your window right now. And I agree. They should be getting Real Muto in there, trade some of your prospects. Yes. I mean,
Domingo
in the next
Santana,
coming years.
Go get Real Muto. Go get Domingo Santana right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I mean, they're in their window. They need to do it.
Like, they could easily put together a package. You know, I'm just going to spitball, and, you know, I know people are going to yell at me on Twitter for even suggesting this, but why not go get Dan Straley and Real Muto for a package around Mejia? I think that would get done. And then trade Danny Salazar for Domingo Santana.
Yep, it's done. Boom. Like, Salazar has been a headache. So.
Imagine Real Muto and Domingo Santana in this lineup. And, like, I mean, is that not put them in the talks, you know? And then they've got Straley to replace Salazar. They still have Clevinger on this roster and Tomlin, so.
Yes, I agree with that wholeheartedly. I think that's probably the way that they should go. You know, Yeah. Did you know Melvin Upton Jr. is in the minor leagues for this team?
Yeah,
I had no idea.
What's
up, BJ?
Yeah. All right, let's move on and talk about the rotation. Corey Kluber, Carrasco. We don't need to spend too much time on Kluber, obviously. He's a stud. He's one of the top four pitchers. Top 15 picked for you?
Yeah, what I would love to do is if I have a back end pick like you did in NFBC, I want to go him and a stud hitter. Or if I could,
Kluber and Chris Bryant,
yeah, something like that. Or if somebody like Scherzer dropped, I would love to go Kluber Scherzer. I know Rick Wolf did that in the FSTA draft, and I was super interested in that because I've done a lot of mocks and you'll grab two stud aces at the beginning, and I've loved my team as it's gone on. I think that's for the first time in possibly years, this is a viable strategy where you can go two stud pitchers at the beginning of your draft, Kluber being the main kind of catalyst there, and you can really work it out. So, you know, Willie Calhoun, I'm going to get him late so I could get some relinquish some power. And, you know, you can even go like Bradley Zimmers of the world to get some speed. Like, there's so many bats later on that, like, I think it's a viable strategy for once.
All right. Carrasco, what are your thoughts on him?
I mean, I remain a fan. At the same time, I'm not willing to pay a top 40 cost. I know he went 200 innings for the first time last year. I'm not banking on the durability. So if I'm in a shallow format and I know that I can replace him DL wise, that's where I would be more likely to take him. But I'm not expecting another 200 inning year this season.
I got into a point, and I was talking about this with Gary and Thorne on his radio show and podcast. You know what? I'm actually on board with the price. I'm okay with it. At the end of the day, every pitcher is an injury risk. We saw this with Bumgarner and Strasburg, or not Strasburg, but Syndergaard last year. I'm looking for skills, and dude's got elite skills. He did throw 200 innings. No one throws 200 innings anymore. So, like, even if he doesn't get to 200, it's not that big of a deal. As long as he's – I mean, he had virtually identical numbers in terms of strikeout rate and ERA the last two seasons. You know, 3.29 ERA, 3.32 ERA. 10 strikeouts per nine, 9 strikeouts per nine. Two walks per nine both years. Just to write about one home run per nine the last 2 years. I mean, he's about as stable as you get. It's just a question of how many innings you get. And that's a question virtually on every pitcher except for Corey Kluber in Strasburg. In Scherzer.
Yeah, skills-wise, he's amazing. His pitches are awesome. Like, I have no problems with Carrasco in that way. He's just always been a guy that I've somewhat avoided, probably for bad reasons at this point. But, you know, I look at durability as a huge issue at the beginning of the draft. The first four rounds, I'm looking for guys that have remained steadily durable. And really, he hasn't done that for the majority of his career, which is the only reason. But as far as skills-wise, you're completely right. He's a stud.
He's gotten at least 30 starts in two of the last 3 years. And
yes.
In that third year, 25 starts. So, I mean, it hurt, but it didn't hurt you that much.
Hey, I agree.
All right. Trevor Bauer.
I am on board, and I never thought I'd be in a place where I would say that, but I'm on board Bauer. Like, what he did in the second half last year really, you know, obviously I do the daily matchups column for HQ, and last year in the second half, I just kind of continued to track him, and his starts were just stellar. You know, over 10 strikeouts per nine in the second half, dropped the walk rate to under three walks per nine, swinging strike rate went up. He did strand a couple more runners than usual, but that didn't really crush his expected ERA or xFIP. I mean, it was 3.6 in the second half, 3.15 ERA for the second half in total, but I'm on board. I think that this is a guy that is kind of turning into not an ace, but like a kind of secondary level starter that we can rely on for fantasy. And he's only 27. I think that's a little bit of a shocker. Some people would probably assume he's 30 at this point, but I'm on board. I think that he's going to give you like a 4 ERA is what he's put up the last couple of years here, 4.26, 4.19. That's just not going to kill you anymore. He might have some struggles here and there, but so does everybody. And the 150 ADP about is a little bit rich, but I think that he's going to be a strong starter three for you, and I'm willing to pay that price. So I love him.
Man, it's hard for me because I've loved Trevor Bauer for a long time, and I've gone back to the well and back to the well and back to the well. And last year he finally does, you know, kind of, you know, in the second half what I'd been hoping he'd do for a long time. Ugh, he still gives up too many home runs.
This is true.
It's hard because, yeah, I mean, his strand rate is – I'm looking at his numbers from August 4th on, you know, his first start in August on, you know, 2.57 ERA, over 10 strikeouts per nine, only walked 2.3 batters per nine, but a 1.4 home run per nine. His strand rate was almost 94%. I mean, those two numbers right there jump out at me as numbers that are unsustainable. You know, he's getting a good ground ball tilt, which I like. He gets strikeouts. I think I'm on board, especially considering the price. The price isn't, like, through the roof. There are pitchers in his area that are really interesting to me. Johnny Cueto's in his area. You know, Lance McCullers is in his area. Chase Anderson is in his area. But I don't mind the price. 146 pitcher – or 146 overall player off the board, you know, probably around, you know, top 25 to 30 starter. I think that's fair. I'll probably go back to the well at some point. You're just not getting that huge discount.
No, you're not.
I was hoping we would get because people have bought on now.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I have chosen Cueto over him in multiple drafts to this point because I think if you're giving me the choice between Cueto and Bauer, I'm going to definitely go Cueto 10 times out of 10. But if Cueto's gone, then that kind of leaves you in a little bit more interesting position. I agree with your points about the strand rate and stuff, but that's the thing is every pitcher has their warts in some way, shape, or form. His just happens to be home runs. But at the same time, we've hit a spot with Bauer where I think he's actually comfortable with his pitch repertoire. He's comfortable with the organization he's in. We're not dealing with the distractions anymore that used to kind of follow him everywhere. And I think that that's given him the ability to really just focus on baseball. And we've seen what the results are out of that.
All right, let's talk about another guy who's got plenty of warts, but the upside is just so tantalizing. It's hard not to want to buy back in. Danny Salazar, you look at the numbers, and they are just mind-bogglingly crazy. I mean, it's just 12.67 strikeouts per nine last year. Yeah, his ERA was 4.28, which, you know, in this day and age isn't bad necessarily, but the FIP and xFIP, 3.48, 3.21.
Yep.
You know, he got BABIPed a little bit. You know, the home runs are a little bit higher than you would like, but they're not as high as what we saw with Bauer and Bauer's second half. You know, even held the walks down a little bit, you know, away from where he's been in the past. The question is he going to be healthy? Is he going to start? What are your thoughts on Danny Salazar? Because he's going right behind Bauer.
Yeah, I love Salazar again, because flat out, if we're looking at just filthy pitchers in baseball that are starters, Salazar has to be among the top 10 with just filthy stuff. 16% swing strike rate in the first half, 18% in the second half. Like, you got to be kidding me. That's just flat out nasty. His velocity, I know he dealt with some arm issues, shoulder to arm and you know, elbow, I believe. But this is a guy that it still hasn't really mattered. Yes, the walk rate has always been a concern, but in, you know, 9 games started in the second half, 11 games overall, he ended up having 3 walks per nine. We can live with that. I can live with Salazar having 3.5 walks per nine. It's fine. And I know that he's going to have some home run issues at times, but this is a guy that, you know, his xFIP in the second half, according to HQ, was 2.91. That's what you potentially can get. Top 175 pick-ish. I'm in. I'm absolutely in on that price. Is there a possibility for durability concerns? Absolutely. But like you even mentioned earlier with somebody like Carrasco, this is an example of a guy in Salazar that you're already kind of baking in the durability problems and you're not paying a top 5-round pick for him. I know a couple years ago he was going in, what, the top 6 rounds, 5 rounds, somewhere like that.
Yeah, I bit that price last year.
Yeah, sure, and for good reason, because the skills are absolutely insane. Strikeouts is what we look for in fantasy, and he continues to rise. I mean, that has been kind of also an example of him having a small amount of innings the last couple of years, so that's kind of helped his numbers in the strikeout category. If we span it over a course of like 180 innings like it was in 15, then, you know, that's somebody that was probably more along the lines of 10 strikeouts per nine. But overall, yes, love the guy. Among the lead leaders in swing and strike rate last year, despite it being relievers or starters, the walks is what we're worried about. And I think in a nutshell, this is a guy that you should buy and just kind of ride the wave while it happens, because there's going to be some series of him being absolutely lethal. And there's going to also be a series of him having 4, 5, 6 starts in a row that are just rocky. And that's the way that it goes with Salazar. But at the end of the season, I think you're going to be happy.
You know what format Danny Salazar is fantastic for?
Head-to-head?
Tower's head-to-head, where his K9 instead of strikeouts.
Oh, my God.
And I drafted him last year for Stefania Bell. Of pitchers that had a minimum of 100 innings pitched, which Danny Salazar barely made it over that.
Yeah.
Where would you guess he was in terms of ranked in K9?
I would put him in, what, the top 4, top 5?
He's second behind Chris Sale.
Yeah. I mean, that's his stuff, man. His stuff is so lethal. He's kind of like Wild Thing, like the literal version of Wild Thing. There's times that I watched him and he had things reined in a bit, and it's like, man, he's really controlling his stuff today, like, and it's already nasty. That's awesome. And then there's other days where it's like you just saw him not be able to know where any of his pitches were going, and that's just the ride that you take with him.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, the price is there. I'm going to buy in again, especially, like, let's say, for instance, like in my NFBC draft right now, and I'm hoping nobody in that NFBC league is listening, but there's a couple Baseball HQ guys that follow me on Twitter that are in that league, then they probably are. But let's just say, for instance, I took Corey Kluber with my first pick. First or second round pick. And then in my 3 or 4 wraparound, I took Zach Greinke. So I've got a pretty start of a stable rotation. I can take the gambles.
Yep.
You know, and Salazar is a guy I'm willing to gamble on if I've got a stable rotation up front. If he's like my 4th or 5th pitcher and my first 2 and 3 pitchers are looking pretty stable, Danny Salazar is going to end up on my team. So, like I said, hopefully nobody's listening, but whatever. We'll see. let's finish out with the bullpen. I mean, well, Mike Clevinger, interesting to you. I mean, obviously,
yes.
Tomlin's not. Clevinger's going to start the year in AAA, barring a trade of one of their starters, which, like I said, should happen, but I don't know that it will.
I think Clevinger starts the year in the rotation. I'm full board Mike Clevinger. I think he's going to be one of the best values.
DFA Tomlin or move Tomlin to a long man role?
He's done the long man role before. Tomlin has, and honestly, like, his home run rate is out of control. Mike or Josh Tomlin. He's just at a point where
Mike Tomlin.
Pittsburgh yeah, Mike Tomlin Steelers too. He's also on a pretty bad binge himself, but I just love Clevinger. I love the gains that he made last year. Mind you, that was in like 21 games started, but you know, he hit over 120 innings pitched. Yes, he outperformed his peripherals, but the strikeout rate really was what kind of shocked me. He ended up bumping it up to 10 strikeouts per nine. The swinging strike rate supported that. He's got a pretty good overall set of pitches that I am enamored with. He's always been one of my favorite minor league guys. Matt and I have talked about him a ton on the minor league show. And I think that this is going to be kind of the first year that we see him get a full year of starting in the major leagues. That's, again, going to come with some rocky times, but there's also the ability for him to be a 3.5, 3.3 ERA guy with, 9 to 10 strikeouts per nine. And I love that profile. I love his cost. Like, 217 is pretty solid for a guy that I think will start the year in the rotation and get anywhere between 150 and 170 quality innings. So Mike Clevinger is one of my guys this year that I'm just all in on.
I like Mike Clevinger, and I've got him in a couple of situations, but I can't get down on the cost because I don't, until they move someone, I just don't see how they start him in the rotation. I think he goes down to AAA, which is unfortunate because, like I said, I definitely think he should be. But right now, guys going behind him that interest me, Blake Snell, Aaron Sanchez, Faria, Waka, Tehran. You know what I mean? These are guys who are all going to start the year in the majors. In an NFBC league where you're going to draft, a crap ton of starters because, it's 50 rounds draft and hold, I can see buying in on a Clevinger. But, like, in your standard 12-team mix, in your standard 15-team mix, we don't have enough roster spots to be holding on to guys that are going to start the year in the minors unless they have extreme upside. I understand why people are going to roster Acuna and hold on to him and hope that he's up, in late April, which I don't buy. But, I understand why people are going to hold on to, certain top-tier minor league prospects. Clevinger isn't that guy. I like his future. I think he could have a very nice season once he is up, but I think he's waiver wire fodder in most 12 and 15 team leagues because you just don't have the flexibility with the 10-day DL and the injuries we saw last year to be able to hold on to a guy like that.
I think you're overrating Josh Tomlin.
No, I'm not. I'm overrating the chance that he – or, well, I'm looking realistically at the chance he starts the year in the majors, in the rotation.
It's a possibility. I'm not going to say it's not because it definitely is. I just think that, you draft skills, not roles, and, eventually he's going to end up being in there. I think he's going to start the year there, but even if you don't, a month maybe, tops? That's where I'm at with him.
All right. Cody Allen, most underrated closer in baseball.
Probably at this point, somewhere in that vicinity. Like, I don't think we need to take time on this. He's a stud. He's been a stud for a while now. I don't have much to say other than he's a really stud reliever, maybe underrated, or most underrated in baseball. That's a possibility, but, 30 saves, 3 straight years. The guy's a stud. I don't really have much to say.
If I told you he was the only closer to have 30 or more saves the last 3 years with a strikeout rate over 11.5 in a sub-3 ERA, would you believe me?
I would, yes.
I made that stat up, but, like, he did all those things. Like,
yeah, the only
I don't know if that's true or not.
The only people that possibly have done the same thing are what? Like, Chapman, maybe? I don't think
but
so, though.
Chapman didn't have a sub-3 ERA last year.
No, he didn't. Yeah, maybe Jansen. Jansen probably did. So other than Jansen and, gosh, I'm trying. Kimbrell, I know, has had an over 3 ERA at some point the last couple of years.
I'm looking it up right now. I'm going to sort by the last 3 years on Fangraphs. and go split seasons, and look and see who of the 30 save guys have continuously been in there. So let's see. I gotta enlarge.
He's going the exact same price this year that he was last year. It's kind of remarkable.
Yeah. I'm guessing this is too many guys. let's see. Kimbrell in 2015 did it in 2004. Well, this is boring. So I'm gonna say that him and Jansen are the only two. But I could be totally wrong about that, and if someone wants to double-check me and check me on Twitter. But I just want to make up a stat to show you how good and consistent Cody Allen has been. And it's pretty phenomenal that this guy has 11.5 strikeouts per nine the last 3 years.
4 years, actually.
Yeah. Sub-3 ERA the last 4 years, and at least 30 saves the last three. I mean, this guy is a stud, and nobody treats him with respect.
I absolutely agree. I have landed him twice already, and one person gave me shit about it. I was like, I just don't understand you. I really don't. I don't know what even argument to bring up here. But
closers going above him: Wade Davis, Ken Giles, Felipe Rivero. And I know a lot of people really love Rivero, but Rivero's only done it 1 year as a closer. And who knows, will Pittsburgh win 180 games this year? No.
I don't think so.
Will Ken Giles close all year? I don't know.
Yeah, this is the exact same role that he was in going into last year, Allen. And that ended up with him, again, being under a 3 ERA and having over 30 saves. There's really not – there's not an argument for him to be taken outside of the top five closers, in my opinion. And even if you made the argument that he was a top three closer, I really couldn't give you a strong one against that, to be honest, because this is a guy that, again, has just been just flat-out lethal the last couple of years. I don't know.
Oh, man.
What?
We have breaking news. A major transaction has happened.
Oh, my God. I think I know what you're about to talk about.
Do you know what I'm about to talk about?
I think you're being sarcastic, so yeah.
Yeah, it's a huge news. The Giants have re-signed Gregor Blanco.
Giant for life. He can never leave.
Oh, God. Worst day ever.
And your other boy, Danny Espinosa, is on the Yankees. How do you feel about that?
I feel great about that. Love that mustache. All right, that's gonna wrap us up. You can reach Mike on Twitter at Mike Warner FWFB, me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. Mike, what do you got going on?
I'm about to do a bunch of player capsules for Fangraphs. About to do a lot of stuff for us on the draft guide that I need to touch up and finish up on. We have the minor league show coming this year. I'm going to continue writing for Baseball HQ, doing the daily matchups column this year. I am going to be your right-hand wingman going to Tout Wars. I mean, what am I not doing?
Yeah. You, me, and my wife are going to share a hotel room in Tout Wars. That's going to be fun.
I'm going to feel like, I don't know if you've ever seen, the movie with Jason Bateman and Identity Theft or Identity Thief or whatever, but in the movie, Jason Bateman just locks himself in the bathroom and listens to the big lady have sex with this guy in the hotel room, and it's pretty much what I envision happening with me at the Tout Wars Hotel. So
wow.
That's gonna be awesome.
You better
awesome.
Hope my wife does not hear you call her the big lady in this scenario. So
no, it's an example of a movie. I would never say that ever to anybody.
All right, that's gonna wrap us up for this episode. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.